So, my name is Bob, and I present this presentation together with Amit. So, as you know, most of the Bell type inequality are made in sum of correlation. And in this work, I'm going to present you a new type of Bell inequality, which is based on product of correlation. And then we're going to ask, what is it, classical and quantum limits? But first, I will remind you the CHSH game. In this game, both Alice and Bob get a coin of one or two, and then they need to decide whatever if to raise their hand up or lower their hand down. But in order to win this game, only in the case that both of the coin is two, they should do something different with their arm. Otherwise, they should do the same. So this game can be represented by the Bell CHSH parameter, where CIJ is the correlation between Alice and Bob outcomes. And it's already known that its quantum limit is 2 square root of 2, and its classical limit is 2. And also, notice that in order to be greater than 2, there is a need in quantum entanglement. So now I'm going to show you how we actually prove it, the Bell CHSH series unbound using a quantum correlation matrix. So I construct the second moment matrix of this vector of operators, and Carmen and Cohen show that prove that this second moment matrix is positive semi-definite. So I can apply the Schur complement that is say that all local measurement of Alice is always greater than the correlation between Alice and Bob. So now using this inequality, I can perform a quadratic form with these two vectors, and I will get these two inequalities, okay? So sum these two inequalities for one with the one with j equal to 1 and the second j equal to 2, I will get this inequality. Now from the triangular inequality, I can get exactly the Bell CHSH parameter. And this is actually bound by 2 square root of 2. So this is a nice proof for the series unbound for the CHSH parameter. So now we ask, why not to multiply these two inequalities? And now we can get a new parameter that we call it the multiplicative Bell parameter, which is bound by 2 in a quantum, and we're going to prove it later. But this is a proof that it's a statistic limit, and we're going to show you later on that is also a series unbound. So now I will introduce you to the multiplicative two device game. So in this game, both Alice and Bob get two vectors, A1, A2 for Alice, and B1, B2 for Bob. And after she gets a vector, let's say Alice, she needs to decide whatever is to go forward or backward along this vector. And both are the same, and both of them send the information to some droid, and the droid calculates a one step using this formula. And the goal in this game is to maximize the area that the droid did after several steps. So this is can call the maximization game. Optimization area. Okay. So now this game is proportional to this multiplicative Bell parameter that I showed you earlier. And we proved that it's bounded in quantum mechanics by 2 and in local theorem by 1. So now I'm going to show you.
Can you go back again just one second? Alice has two directions, which are the vectors in her in which he receives.
Yeah.
And Bob is too. And they mutually control the joy?
So
both of them?
So they are, once they met in the past and they share some strategy, and then they not commuting anymore, and they use the strategy that they decide earlier, whatever, if to decide to go forward or backward, whatever they get. So it's really similar to the CHSH game, but now they need to maximize the area and not like have sum of correlation.
Yeah, just a single step here is computed both by Addison Bob's vectors,
yeah.
By this formula.
Yeah, this is the exact. This is the vector that you get, and this is a whatever if to go forward or backward along this vector. This is
so the direction is controlled by Bob, and the sign is controlled by the inner book.
Yeah. Yeah, but it could be the opposite around.
So that I understand the picture. So the first thing is that Alice has like vector in the 45 like degree basis was Bob. And in the picture it seems that the steps are like very like they are more in the 90 degree basis.
Yeah, because this is
The
okay.
Got it. And the second question is like there is kind of an accumulation of the path which hints that there is like a sum of the previous steps.
No, no, no. Each step is individual and it's not independent in the previous.
So, but this trajectory has several steps. So, is that like previous steps in the game or is that you play?
Yeah. It's a previous game in the. Yeah, it's a previous steps that happened later in the game. But she always. After she chooses a direction, Bob. Alice chooses direction, Bob chooses direction, the void only made one.
Yeah, and eventually you play
many times,
steps, let's say 100 rounds of the game.
Yeah, like
and then you say, what's the area after 100?
Yeah.
Got it.
Okay. So now I'm going to show you how we construct this parameter for n devices. So we take these n orthogonal vectors and this vector of correlation. And actually, using this formula, we actually get the multiplicative Bell parameter for n devices. Explicitly, it can be written like this. So for n equal 2, it will be as I showed you before. And for n equal 3, we look like this. OK, so now we made some several simulation for 2 and 3 devices. And here you can see, when Alice and Bob share non-local correlation between them, it's represented by the blue passes, which is, you can see that it's different from the orange passes when they only use local correlation. Okay, so now Amit will.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Bar. Okay, so as you can see, we have constructed this multiplicative Bell inequalities for arbitrary value of n, where, as you recall, it's always bipartite, and n just determines how many measurement settings each one of Alice and Bob have. And now, for our main result, we have proved that the Tillerson bound for the nth multiplicative Bell inequality is always n factorial. Okay, so, yeah.
What do you mean by Tillerson bound?
I mean the highest value you can obtain using quantum mechanical correlations.
Okay.
Okay. Was there another question? Okay. So, I'll just go over the outline for this proof. The first one is proving that Bn is always bounded by n factorial. The second one would be that we can actually get to n factorial in quantum mechanics. So for the first part, this inequality follows from these three steps. So the first one is just showing you where the n factorial comes from. If you take the product for all the squared norms for these vectors vj that we used in the construction, you get n factorial squared. So that's where this magical function n factorial comes from. The second step follows from what we showed you before regarding the inequality we saw from the positive semi-definiteness or the covariance matrix. We saw that the Cj Cj transpose is bounded, is small, less or equal to this matrix Ra for each value of j. So by using this, we can say that all of these quadratic forms are bounded by these quadratic forms where we always take the vectors vj. Again, the same vectors vj we used in our construction. So this holds for each value of j. And the third part follows from the inequality of arithmetic and geometric means. It's here, note that here we take the product of all these quadratic forms where the vectors vj are normalized, okay? So using the inequality of the means, this is bounded by this expression here, which is just one. Now, if I take all of these three steps, it's quite trivial to see that I can prove that bn squared is bounded by n factorial squared. Yeah?
Sorry, could you just remind me what bn's here?
What? Sorry, what?
Like you want to bound bn, right?
Yeah, bn's the, yeah.
So what is the vector bn in C?
Oh, yeah, okay, I'll go one step backwards. Cj is this vector of correlations. Note that the construction is really asymmetric, okay, right? Because these are vectors of correlations of all of Alice's measurements with Bob's J measurements, okay? So it's like taking all of Bob's J correlations, and Vj are these vectors from the construction, from that, these are orthogonal vectors, and that's the Bell family. So it's asymmetrical, right? It's like Bob has a special function in this construction. So as you can see, Bn is this expression here, and if I take Bn squared, it just means taking the product of all of these quadratic forms. And now by if I use this to take out the norms, I get this expression, and it's bounded by one, so that's basically it. Now, why am I showing you all of this? The thing is because the next step would be showing you that I can saturate this down, right? That I can actually obtain bn equals n factorial in quantum mechanics. So so in order to saturate this inequality, I need to saturate here, all of these inequalities, and this inequality here. So that's the motivation. And apparently, if Alice and Bob share this maximally entangled state, for instance, then Alice can always saturate this inequality, and Bob can always do something that saturates all of these inequalities. And here's the strategy. Alice and Bob both have qubits, so they both measure poly vectors, right? Like a linear combination of the poly matrices. And Alice chooses A1 arbitrarily, and then for each value of J, of I, sorry, from 2 through N, she chooses AI, which is orthogonal to the sum of all of the previously chosen vectors. Note that here is this dot product is in R3, right? Because these are real vectors. Okay, so if Alice does that, uses this algorithm, she can always saturate this bound. And as for Bob, after Alice is done choosing her own measurements, he does this. He writes all of Alice's measurement directions in a matrix, multiplies it by each vector vj, and then he multiplies it by this function that just flips the y sign. And if he does this for each j, he saturates this inequality for each j. So with this strategy, combined with Alice and Bob, saturates the bound and achieves n factorial for the Bn. Any questions so far? Okay. So I'll just give an example to illustrate this construction, the strategy. So for example, if I have n equals 3, Alice can choose a1 just as a x, meaning that she just measures the Pauli matrix sigma x. And she needs to choose a2, which is orthogonal, so she could choose y, for instance. And then for a3, she could go to z, right? She could measure sigma z. But she can also remain in the xy plane. So she can take this a3, for example. And that's for each value of n, they can always do it just in the xy plane. And as for Bob, let's say we have the vectors from the previous slide for Alice, right? X, y, and y minus x normalized. Then Bob for j equals 2, for instance, has this vector as v2. And this product achieves this vector, and then it just needs to normalize it. Okay, so that's just a simple example. Okay, now, so we have the quantum mechanical limit of the Bell parameter for each value of n, and we saw that it's quite an elegant expression, just n factorial. But what about the Bell limit? What about the highest value we can obtain using just local correlations or locally hidden variable theories? So assuming locally hidden variables, we can say that this joint probability exists for each, if I take just all of the measurements combined, there's a joint probability distribution. And by using the linearity of expectations, I can write down the n multiplicative Bell parameter in this form. Now, unfortunately, in the general case, finding the Bell limit is hard. It's a difficult problem. We know it specifically for n equals 2. I showed you it before. It was 1, if you recall. So the Bell limit for b2 is 1. But for general n, we don't have a general expression. But we can say a few things about it. So the first part, the first thing we considered was, what if Bob takes what we call a deterministic strategy, meaning that each of his measurables is always either always 1 or always minus 1. So in this case, this function here obtains this form, meaning it's just a function of all of Alice's expected values, which we denote as mu I, and it's an absolute value of this function, Pn of mu1 through mu n. And we have proven that this function is, for each n, it's an n variable harmonic function, meaning that its Laplacian always vanishes. What is this good for? Well, as you may recall, for a harmonic function, the maximum is always on the surface of the domain. Now here, the domain is the n-dimensional hypercube. Why? Because each mu I here must be between minus 1 and 1. So we have an n-dimensional hypercube, and we know that its maximal value is somewhere on the surface of this hypercube. Now, that by itself is not really helpful, but because it's still a hard problem to find the maximal value, even if you look only on the surface. But it motivated us to look for what we call fully deterministic strategy, meaning that we looked at the corners of the n-dimensional hypercube. So corners mean that both Alice and Bob are deterministic. They both, for each measurement, either always choose 1 or always choose minus one. So what we did is we constructed a very specific, what we call a fully deterministic strategy. And for this strategy, the value that the Bell parameter obtains is really, it can be computed efficiently. And we denote it by FDN. So since this fully deterministic strategy is a special case of a Bob deterministic strategy, we can say that FDN is bounded by the maximal value of the harmonic function Pn. And since a Bob deterministic strategy is a special case of a local hidden variable scenario, we can say that this is bounded by the Bell limit. And of course, the Bell limit is a special case of the quantum mechanical domain. So the Bell limit is bounded by n factorial. So that's what we can say. And now the next thing we examined was what happens if you take the dimension, the number of measurements for each one of those participants, Alice and Bob, to infinity. So what we notice is that the limit of the value the fully deterministic strategy obtains to n factorial is this nice number, the square root of pi over 2e. So this implies that in the limit of infinitely many measurement devices, the fully deterministic strategy is proportional to the Tillerson bound. And we believe this is also the case for the Bell limit, but we haven't proved that. So here you can see a simulation for just values of the quantum bound and the fully deterministic value for many values of n. And you can see the ratio plotted for values of n that go up to 250. As you can see, it almost converges to 0.76. And one of the reasons for these so-called ripples is that the fully deterministic strategy behaves slightly different for odd and even values of n. But we believe that these maximal values here in these ripples conform to the Bell limit. That if you take an upper envelope, you would get the Bell limit. But again, that's just a conjecture. We weren't able to prove that part. Yeah.
Is that the actual resolution of the squiggly bits, or is it just interpolated?
Well, no, that's
end points, or are there actually just kind of like 10 up and downs on
these ups and downs here are just that's the vertical the horizontal distance between this up and this down is one. Yeah, it's so if we do just dots, you would just see like one dot. Okay.
Actually, then.
Yeah. It's like these ups and downs conform with it's just even odd.
So there should be a lot more, basically around 250, if you were to do an each n.
Why?
Well, because there's like 50, there's 25 even, 25 odd things in between 200 and 250, right? And in the chart, there's only about 10 ups and downs.
I don't know if they're 25 or not. I might be wrong here, but we can do a better plot with high resolution.
It is just one up for odd down for.
Yeah, that's all. Mm-hmm.
Since you limit yourself to Bob just being one for all settings.
Uh-huh.
It means that you're exploring deterministic strategies where only you're varying Alice's behavior.
Well, not in this case. The FDN is like both.
Is a particular strategy.
Yeah.
But in principle, for n like 2 to 10, mm-hmm. You can explore all of Alice's deterministic strategies where Bob does one numerically. This is a very small search. It's just 2 to the n.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could see whether FDN is even the best deterministic strategy they ask could use when Bob is the variable. Right, took that?
Okay.
We tried that, and we found, I'm completely sure that we found that for small numbers, the FDI is the maximum deterministic strategy.
Okay, so to summarize, we have constructed a new class of Bell inequalities, and we found the general expression with the Searson bound for any value of measurement devices, settings, which is n factorial. And we found the lower bound to the Bell limit, which is easy to compute, and is proportional to the Searson bound in the limit of infinitely many measurement settings. So that's it. Thank you for listening, and we could take questions now. Yeah.
Small technical question. Mm-hmm. With this parameter n, and it was present in a slide where you mentioned a bipartite system, Alice and Bob. Exactly what is the role of n? Is it the number of parties, the number of measurements, or is the number of measurements of Alice proportional to the number of parties?
Okay, yeah. So it's a number of measurement settings for both Alice and Bob.
Okay.
Yeah. It's always the same in our construction.
So when you say in the limit of like n, the number of devices n, it's basically the number of different measurements you do on the system,
yeah,
and that you're going to use an apartheid quantum state.
Yeah. No. And yeah, exactly. Note that as we said here, we can always saturate the Searson bound with 2 qubits. So it's not the dimension of the Hilbert space. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there an example of a multiplicative bound on these in particular, where the maximum, either for the quantum or the classical case, is on the interior of the correlation set? From what you're saying, it wouldn't have to be at the boundary, right?
In what sense?
So the quantum is at the boundary, for sure.
Yeah. So an alternative way that I understand this is they're working in the space of correlators. And so if I give you a vector of the correlators, C11 to CNN, uh-huh, and I simply ask, is this a quantum realization?
Right.
The first level of the NP hierarchy, where you just consider the second level matrix, is a test for whether or not these correlators are in the quantum set, and it's tight.
Yes.
And so you can say, okay, this setting up these second level matrices and demanding that the positives have been in it is precisely the same as demanding that you limit yourself to the vectors in the quantum set. And so now if you take a some function and you optimize it over this semi-different constraints, which they do, then the maximum value of this polynomial function of the correlators must be precisely the quantum maximum, because it's just what you would get.
Why in the boundary of the?
So again, NPA is characterized as the quantum set. NPA 1, of course, characterized the quantum set in this space. And this is essentially phrased as saying, you know, we're demanding positive semi-divinous. So how large can we make this Bell inequality under the condition that the second order matrices are positive semi-divinous? And then this is the bound to get in factorial. Which means that you cannot have a larger value. So maybe this is not answering your question.
For the, why it's on the boundary of the quantum set, but would be in the quantum set. Why on the quantum boundary? I mean, maybe I can think of a little thing. So maybe I should just say, then what happens with the classical case?
So maybe I'm misunderstanding. You're saying it's possible that the point which maximizes this multiplicative Bell inequality, quantum point which maximizes this, might not be that point on the boundary of the quantum set.
Well, because the point of the harmonic, right? Because you said it's harmonic,
yeah.
So the maximums have to be on the boundary for Bob being deterministic.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what if that's just if Bob's deterministic, right? If it is if it's both Alice and Bob are, if it's not necessarily a convex function, I guess, anymore. So
yeah, that's right. So what you're asking is it possible that the maximum value, the Bell limit, is not in the case where Bob is deterministic? It's like maybe the maximum is when both Alice and Bob are not deterministic.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, yeah.
Could that be like for n equal 2, Bob can be deterministic.
Okay.
But for Bob, but for n equals 3 or more, we didn't even able to investigate the joint probability where both Alice and Bob are not deterministic,
mm-hmm.
because so you see that writing the expected value, we can get Bob outside. Like outside each BJ can be outside, so it was feel like it's good that Bob will be deterministic, but we not know that for sure. That perhaps there is some not deterministic strategy for Bob that will get around or something like that.
And then could it be even worse, where it could actually be like, could the optimal be in the interior of the set, or does it have to be at the somewhere on the boundary, even if they're not?
Well, intuitively, I don't think that is possible because of this specific construction, because of this specific asymmetric form of our Bell parameter. We haven't really rigorously proven this part, but that's what we think.
The problem is no longer going to be an n-dimensional hypercube. It's going to be something like
like a product of two cubes, obviously, but it's still a space that maybe you could somehow look into. I'm not certain. I don't have a definite answer.
In all Bell type experiments, there's always at some point that Alice or Bob have to make a decision on what they call free will.
Okay, yeah.
And so if you say that's not a free will decision at all, then you get away, then you can make the classical system in which they pop in. And you're violating the principle, of course, but in the principle, the thing depends on this so-called free will ingredient in the argument.
Yeah.
I mean, the door also does something.
Yeah, just let me. If I go back to the game, yeah, I think it would be the best way to understand it. So we never said that they don't have free will. Actually, they do. Here,
that's what exactly you say. They do have free will.
Yeah, they do have free will.
I'm saying they actually didn't. Because if you have a deterministic theory, then nobody has any free will.
What
you do is determined by the past.
No, yeah, what we're saying is just that if you limit yourself to the locally invariable case, to the not quantum mechanical case, then we believe that the deterministic strategy is the best they can do. Like, best classical strategy is deterministic, but it doesn't mean that they don't have free will.
Like also in Bell CHSH.
Yeah, even here in the Bell CHSH game.
The best classical
strategy.
Yeah, special role played by this is one entangled state that you give both to Alice and Bob.
Yeah.
That state, you presumably know what it does, but at some point, if you assume some correlations, which classically would be very difficult to understand how such correlations would come about. If you do assume such correlations, then you can get around the bound, around the classical bound.
I don't really see how it's different from the CHSH game, because the setting is pretty much the same in the sense that they get a binary input, it doesn't really matter if it's binary, but an input, and they make a decision which could be either deterministic or probabilistic or based on quantum mechanics and based on
the thing is the entangled state that you gave Bob Nellis is only one state, whereas you treat it as if classically you treat it as if there are 0, 0 plus 1, 1. So you can either have both ends like
that, either 0 or 1. And that's this state referring to this state, right?
That's
a specific quantum strategy, which is optimal. It's not the only one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, they can do it with... if you want an optimal quantum strategy, you could take any...
Bell state.
Yeah, any Bell state, and just this matrix would be different.
I haven't understood the details quite well enough in this short time, so
okay.
I don't see much about the details. There is an entangled state involved
uh-huh.
that you treat as if it can be in two states. It can be either 0, 0 or 1, 1.
Okay.
That's strictly not true, it's only one state. So that's, but you treat, classically you treat it as if there are two states, and then you get the more severe constraint that you have to obey.
Okay, I might be missing something, but... Well, if you don't use an entangled state, you can't go over the classical limit, obviously. And this isn't an entangled state. So if you say it's like two separate states, 0, 0, and 1, 1, no, I'm not sure what you could say. Well, that thing.
You want to ask me a question better, I would have to
okay.
The whole setup better.
Okay, back to the game. Or, do you want? Okay, we can do this. Okay, we can discuss it later. Okay.
So this is a question based on Nelly's comment.
Uh-huh.
So is there an NBA hierarchy? It sounds like there's some level of the NBA hierarchy that's tied here.
Yeah, the first level.
First level is tied. Okay, so there exists a hierarchy that works, and it's tight.
So we can only say that this is related to the first level of the NBA hierarchy. I don't know.
Okay.
We can't make any.
Anyway, so I was just wondering if you with NBA you can also do classical correlations. You can just add in the rest of the commutation. So Alice's measurements will commute with her own measurements. They have just columns, so you can kind of tighten NPA for classical correlations. I was just wondering if you can use this to certify Bell inequality.
So
you put more constraints into the SDP, now you have a smaller objective, and then the dual will give you Bell inequality. And that way you don't have to worry about just deterministic strategies, but you can have shared algorithms and all this stuff.
We will have to think about it.
I think that at NPA level 1, everything commutes already.
I don't think there's actually any additional restrictions by saying that it can be. Is it just to do the same thing you XOR games without the function is not here anymore, so you can't actually solve it? Say again, please. Like saying that it's NPA level one just means it's the SDP for XOR games.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just looking at, so it's like the leftover or whatever. But
yeah.
The function that you're thinking of it is not linear anymore, so you
yeah,
can
that's true.
Plug it into an SDP solve. So.
Yeah, so one incentive of looking at Bell inequalities which are not linear combinations of correlations is that you could do something more elaborate, more because we know that the classical correlations are polytope, but the quantum one is not. So one idea that we had is that maybe you could use more applicable inequalities to study the geometry of the quantum correlations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so like the space of classical correlations that should be easier to write down, it's just that you can't utilize the function of that.
Question that it may Okay, I'm not sure if it's touched on this discussion.
Okay.
In the classical case with the linear bulk policies, you can write down a set of, for a given number of settings in each set, you can write down the full set of bulk policies to fully characterize the local correlations.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, it's crucial the linear bulk policies, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any sort of analogous statement in your non-linear?
Oh, yeah, that's. Yeah, that's a good question. Actually, we're not sure since so far we haven't been able to generalize this construction and to construct just similar value qualities using, let's say we, for instance, we've been discussed this in the last 2 days. Let's say you want another set of vectors here, right? And another set of orthogonal vectors. So yeah, so we believe you can use that, for example, another set to construct another multiplicative value inequality. But we're not sure how easy it would be to find the Searson bound and the.
Of course,
the value, because even here we don't know how to find the value. But yeah, you could construct a large family of multiplicative value inequalities. We do not know if you could use that to characterize the entire classical, yeah. Based on classical correlations.
And does it mean you can't use it to characterize the entire space of quantum correlations?
No, even that, I'm not entirely certain we could do. Well, intuitively, I think that if you. Actually, that's another thing that I wanted to say. We are working on another project that's also somewhat related to multiplicative Bell inequalities of a different, which have a different construction, and I think that still not sure, still just a conjecture that if you take general multi-variable polynomials as the Bell inequalities, like polynomials of the two-point correlations, and perhaps even you need to use one-point correlation, but maybe you could use those. If you take enough polynomials of this form, maybe you could use that to characterize the entire quantity.
Entanglement.
Yeah, to take entanglement for the general case, we don't know. We can't say it for sure. Yeah.
Study steering inequalities, I guess maybe building two entanglement detection, and also you can get nonlinear inequalities. So
mm-hmm.
steering a necessary and sufficient space is actually an ellipsoid kind of thing.
Ellipsoid.
Yeah. So that's where you naturally get this kind of shape.
Yeah, you could say. Yeah, you could say that basically any positive 7 definite matrix describes an ellipsoid in a way. So you could say that this matrix describes an ellipsoid in a sense. But note that in this construction, we have n ellipsoids because we have n matrices of this form. It's not one matrix that somehow graphs the entire set of correlations, right? You only have Alice's local correlations and correlations between Alice measurements and Bob's jth measurements. So that's certainly not enough. I don't know if that's what we're asking, but maybe if you take all of these n ellipsoids, you can say that this is sufficient. And
but notice here that the bound of the correlation is given by the local n-dimensional ellipsoid that's only Alice. This is the interesting part of the code. We bound any two-point correlators by only at least local kind of uncertainty. This is the array. It's the Alice local uncertainty.
Yeah, it's also interesting to note that we know for sure that this kind of thing won't work with more than two parties. It won't work. If we go, because you can't use only 2.4 letters to characterize.
It will bound, but it will not be tight. It will still bound, but it will not
yeah,
be tight.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Mm-hmm.
Right, there's no further questions. Let's thank our speakers again.